Well, good evening, everyone, and welcome back to Third Stream View. I'm your not-so-humble host, PK, here for Monday evening, April 9th. Boy, this year is moving quickly. And so is Obama. Overregulating, overtaxing, messing everything up. But before I get on to deep intellectual things, as always, I want to pay homage and thank you to the suits in the office at bbsradio.com for their unwavering support of free speech, free thoughts, a free press, freedom of assembly, and I hope the whole Bill of Rights. Thank goodness for alternative media, and thank goodness for the internet, which the globalists and their lackeys still seek to control. If that SOB, Israel's biggest, best senator, Lieberman, had his way, there'd be a switch just to turn it off. When they don't like what we have to say, it's as if they're trying to protect us in emergencies and whatnot. National security, which is always invoked. So let's keep the internet freedom unregulated by government. If private owners, private broadcasters want to edit or censor themselves or their own guests, that's their business. But the state should never be involved in this sort of thing. It's amazing how much we did and got away with before government became so intrusive and so powerful. And by the way, the number here is 888-429-5471. If you care to call in and speak to the great PK of who is me, of course. And my expertise is trying to get to quick solutions to solve the problems, critiquing them and solving the problems. Because of my background in free market economics, especially the Austrian School of Economics, combined with my vast knowledge of history, especially revisionist history, and political science, and the ethics of liberty. And we must add to that, I'm very well traveled, and I like to say in a cheeky way that I'm an American who actually knows world geography and world history. And I'm an American who actually knows that the rest of the world knows more about America than America knows about the world. And as I've also heard it said, than America knows about itself. But that's a problem because history and geography are the lost subject in this country. I believe there's a deliberate dumbing down. And that's why sheeple like the sheeple are preferred because they go along. They don't ask questions or repeated questions, and they accept what's handed to them. So that's why they would rather shut down people like me or marginalize us or call us conspiracy theorists and all this sort of thing just to shut down dissent. But doesn't work for me, thank you very much. And I get in the habit now of saying hi or saying hello to those pricks from the CIA and the FBI and the national security agencies who listen to this show and other shows and don't like what we have to say, so they monitor it, all wrapped up in patriotism, of course. All wrapped up in patriotism, these other Americans spying on other peaceful Americans, manipulating what they do, throwing wrenches in the gears, trying to cause them discomfort or grief whenever they can, trying to interfere with broadcasting and free speech, and, of course, with their friends, the TSA, messing with people in airports, doing things that you'd normally be prosecuted for. It's funny how the after 9/11, the Republicans, after failing so badly, they couldn't even protect their own headquarters, Pentagon. So after failing so badly, they gave themselves a $40 billion raise by giving us, the rest of the country, the Department of Homeland Security, or as has been said, the Department of Horrible Stupidity. So that's what they did. They fastened another huge bureaucracy on it, courtesy of the Republicans. And, of course, the Democrats have kept it in place because both sides basically agree on everything except how much to spend. And that's how the globalists want it. They want us to live under the illusion that there is a difference between the parties, when they really, they maintain the same foreign policy of intervention, war, foreign aid, all this stuff that isn't constitutional that they keep pushing, all wrapped up in patriotism. Sorry, I'm getting a note here. Richard, the man is online. Let me see. We have a guest. Richard, are you out there? I don't hear anything. Maybe it's a different memo. Where was I? I like that saying about how if fascism ever comes to America, it will come as the cross wrapped in a flag. And I like that because it delineates how things are going. We have more of a soft fascism now, where they continue to blur the line between industry and government, you know, more government contracts, more cozy relationships between industry and government. And unfortunately, businessmen who, first of all, most businessmen do not have a good basis or foundation in economics based on the things they advocate, which is unfortunate. But they're accepting or lobbying for more regulation, which, you know, they can navigate. It hurts competitors. And there's more of this gravy train between the private sector and the state, which there shouldn't be. That's not free enterprise. They want to blur the line even more government contracts, and plus this, you know, this vast military-industrial complex. It's all gouging at the tax trough. So these businessmen make it harder for the rest of us to defend real free market capitalism when a lot of them are crony capitalists. They accept corporate welfare. They accept subsidies and bailouts. That's why I'm for a micro tax to begin with. So there would be, in my view, a 2% corporate tax, 2%. So that way the liberals wouldn't completely wet their pants. Business would pay some taxes, micro taxes, as would the rest of us. And they would be freed up to hire more, to expand, to continue to create the goods and services that they create. That would be the trade-off. They get their small, very small tax rate, which would make them very competitive and very worthwhile investing in. However, the trade-off is no more protectionism, no more political privilege for the politically connected, no more bailouts, no more subsidies. They will compete in a true free market, worrying about only satisfying their customers. And, of course, pollution is a scientific problem, and all pollution is local, so that should be handled, you know, by the states and locally. We don't need a massive federal government to overregulate and do all these things that just aren't necessary. But if you look at the history of regulation, quite often, I think starting in the late 19th century, that big business of the day supported regulation, if not lobbied for it, and staffed a lot of the regulatory agencies with their own people. So they would ultimately be able to, you know, make the regulations, exclude competitors and startups, and navigate their own path with the help of the state, which they help manipulate back and forth. So you would think that traditionally, businessmen would oppose the regulation. I'm opposed to all regulation except pretty much pollution, which is at a local which, you know, through tort law. And again, all pollution is a local, and pollution is primarily a scientific problem. So, but apart from that, a lot of regulation is done supposedly to protect us, when actually it's restricting our choices, hurting competitors, and strengthening the established interests who don't want competition. So that's how they operate. Which, of course, I'm opposed to all that, because I believe in true free enterprise. Okay, back to the millions who are listening and want to speak to me, my millions of fans and listeners. The number here is 888-429-5471 if you care to engage the mighty PK. So I'm going to get back to what I spoke about last week, although, as you know, I can speak about many things because I am the man. I was talking about the new constitution I drew up, which is actually called my secession solution, because I believe, and correctly so, that Washington, D.C. is nothing more than an irreversible cesspool of corruption, organized theft, inflation, taxes, huge deficits, war, the destruction of our sound currency, all these things brought to you by the federal government, because state governments can't print money. They can't station troops overseas. They can't declare wars. That's all up to the sacred federal government. That would be the same government that helped level Dresden, and I believe it was February 1945 in Germany. Completely unnecessary. The same government that leveled and razed Nagasaki in Hiroshima, totally unnecessarily. And these people want that same federal government to provide them with health care and all these other goodies, as if they're going to tame this monstrosity of the central state, the federal government. So when you look at what's been done, it's the federal government that declares wars, creates wars, not the state governments. And then the feds pilfer the state's National Guard units and send them overseas when they're needed here at home for national emergencies or natural emergencies from, you know, weather and this and that, flooding, hurricanes, and, you know, just civil defense. So the whole thing is very distorted, and it's not the type of federalism I would want by any means, but it's so out of control that no one can reform it. Obama just makes it bigger. That's because Obama is Bush 3 at a faster pace. As I like to say, Obama, well, Bush is FDR, and Obama, sorry, Bush is Hoover, and Obama is FDR, because Hoover was the founder of the New Deal. And FDR took it at a faster pace. He expanded it more, grew it more. More taxes, more regulations, and then enabling war to happen, trying to pick a fight with Germany, and then Japan manipulating us into that. And it never fails, because these politicians are able to manipulate the people, like Bush did, like Obama's doing. Although in this election, I'm sure we won't see much hope and change signs. He's got a lot of devout supporters still. I think they're going to be less vocal. We'll see what happens later on. They're going to be less vocal. And, of course, meanwhile, Ron Paul continues to pull massive crowds. I think there was like 8,000 kids at UCLA came to hear him speak. Romney, Gingrich, and Santorum can't draw those kind of crowds, because our young people know what's happening to them. They're getting screwed by all the debt. They're very strong Ron Paul supporters. They're tired of the wars. They're tired of the spending. They're tired of their tuition hikes, which a lot of them don't realize that that's because of government control in the first place or government intervention with education. They make it more expensive. They involve themselves in it more. So, again, and this is the federal government. But yet people still worship the state, or they still think the federal government is such a good thing. But it works against them. And the great Frederick Bastiat, the great French statesman and writer and economist, he said, yeah, it's probably been not quite 200 years ago, but you know, he said, everybody wants to live off of the state, but the state lives off of everybody. Where do you think they get the money from? Which I used to believe, however, yeah, they get the money from the taxpayer in the year, you know, the person next to you, you know, look right, look left, that's where they get it. However, they must also get it through borrowing and inflation, because that seems like it's even gone past what they can get from the neighbor or the people on your left, people on your right. You know, when that's all drained out, then they just print more money or keep, you know, or creating it out of thin air with what do they call electronically they do it just with a, you know, flick of a computer backed by nothing. No wonder gold sales remain so brisk, because gold is sound money. It's acceptable worldwide. It's divisible and it's storable. So that's one of the great things about it. And silver, and perhaps platinum or other valuable commodities that would back the money and give it real value, this medium of exchange, money, which money, by the way, had its origins in the marketplace. Then governments monopolized it, took it over, and declared what its value is. It's a fiat currency. You know, its value is what the state says it is. And by this, when I say the state, I don't mean each individual state in this United States. I'm referring to the central state, the government, especially the federal government, the state. That's the problem. So when you see how it's going down, when I trace things back, it's always the federal government. It seems like to be always their involvement, their problem. It's just awful. So that's the main object of my criticism. And that's where the CIA comes from, of course, the federal government, the military. All that stuff is under federal control. And they just continue to make it worse. So that is something that I'm always aware of and highly critical of. And then you have the very powerful Israeli lobby dictating policy, getting different politicians elected or not elected if you don't accept the Israeli lobby, the mob that it is. It's just too bad that they have that much power and they get away with it. Although, people are waking up to it. There's a consciousness about it that wasn't here a few years ago, but people are starting to question this whole Israeli relationship to the U.S. So I'm glad to see that happening, because something's got to change soon, and there's absolutely no reason to be rattling the sabers to go a war with Iran on Israel's behalf. That's what they want. And as if they attack Iran, what, and then we're supposed to follow suit and be part of it? You know, there's some people are saying that they got the Enterprise, or they got some older battleship or aircraft carrier out there that they want to, you know, maybe bait the Iranians and make it a false flag attack and then lure us into another bankrupting war. That's all this country needs, is another war. Talk about bankrupting us. It's just unconscionable, these bastards in Congress and this president. And that goes for Bush, too. I mean, you know, I was hoping that he wouldn't attack Iran either. I thought about 3 years ago, I lost a bet with a friend of mine, because I thought that they were going to hit Iran. And now this same friend of mine thinks that possibility is pretty strong. I just hope Obama doesn't do it. Mr. Hope and Change. And, of course, they're messing with Syria, which isn't necessary either. Not that their leader is such a nice guy, but they're trying to destroy another secular regime. And I'm sure Israel's very much involved with their Mossad, as is the CIA, probably MI6, intervening in all this stuff and dragging innocent people into war. However, as I understand it, most of the Israelis, or the rank-and-file Israelis, do not want war. It's this idiot Netanyahu and his Likud bastards, the Likud party, Likud, who are in league with a lot of American Jewry or pro-Zionist American Jews. And this situation sort of reminds me of World War II, when pre-World War II, when the Jews in Germany were feeling persecuted. They did not want American Jews intervening and holding their boycott against Germany. They wanted to deal with it themselves and let things work themselves out. They didn't want this intervention. And here you have it again, American Zionist Jews pushing for war with Iran and interfering when, again, as I understand it, most Israelis, they don't want a war with Iran. I mean, Iran's got 70 million people, and if they attack Iran, and a lot of the young people in Iran, they don't like the regime that's in control of Iran, and, you know, they're pro-Western, but if Obama attacks Iran, it'll push these Iranians who otherwise don't care for the mullahs and Ahmadinejad, it'll push them in their lap. So that is something to be avoided. It's not necessary. I'm not worried about Iran getting nukes. They're terrorist. Well, excuse me. I think of Israel as a terrorist apartheid state. They've got over 200 nukes, estimated from 200 to 300 nukes. So what are they worried about Iran for? I'm more worried about Israel and its Samson option. Israel can take out all the its air force, you know, and its nuclear subs and its missiles could take out, you know, Western Europe, Russia, China. I mean, look where Israel's situated. So this mentality of their stupid Samson option is if they get attacked, then they and if they think they're going to go down, they're going to take everybody else with them. Well, isn't that nice? You know, so they're a big problem. Now Germany's, you know, German guilt's giving them nuclear submarines. You know, they want more aid from the U.S. It's just awful how they manipulate our country. And, of course, you have these neocons like Paul Wolfowitz and Richard Pearl, those bastards, probably Douglas Feith, Dennis Ross, that bastard. I'm willing to bet you what I would ask any of them, even Bill Kristol, is do you or have you ever had a dual U.S.-Israel passport? Which isn't illegal, but it shows you the power structure. They just come and go as they please. You know, Israel spies on this country. It has sold our technology to the Russians or the Chinese. I don't trust Israelis for a moment. It's a shame that we're continuously bailing them out and giving an endless supply to them, giving them an endless supply of free American-made murder weapons, because that's what it comes down to. So, like I like to say, America had no enemies in the Middle East before 1948 when Israel was violently imposed on Palestine. Now, I know I'm off the topic a little bit, but I just had to go into some geopolitical discussion because I can, for one. And now I'm going to get back to where I was going to. Last week, I covered roughly the first half of my secession solution, and tonight I want to finish up with it. As you may know, or as I was saying earlier, our federal government's out of control. It cannot be reformed. It's all talk. It can't be done. I'm in agreement with Jefferson, who said something to the effect of he thought in the future that America would break off into several republics, and he wished them well. And keeping in that spirit, I wrote my secession solution a few years ago, and I've tweaked it since then, but I still stand by it, every word, as a way to get from point A to point B. And the beautiful thing about it is it really doesn't take anything away from anyone. It's more critical of government power and really cuts back government power. But it doesn't take anything from anyone, unless you're on the gravy train and you think you're entitled to government jobs and all this huge pensions, all this nonsense. So I address all that, and my solutions are basically market solutions, and it's a much better way to provide the goods and services we need and to shrink back the state and the warfare state. Because what we have now is what we like to call the welfare warfare state or the warfare welfare state. So like when the Democrats are in power, it's the welfare warfare state. When the Republicans are in power, it's the warfare welfare state. Because conservatives and or fascism is not opposed to the welfare state, especially as long as they're running it. That's how it goes. They're not opposed to the welfare state as long as they're running it. And you can see that because they've expanded it. The welfare state grew under Reagan, as did the drug war. That fool pushed a massive drug war on us, which can never be won. Trillions down the drain. It's just awful. So I am going to get back to my secession solution, which I spoke of last week, but I just preempted it tonight with my thoughts on other things and some geopolitical events, this and that. But that's how I see it going down. So anyway, back to my secession solution. And I think I left off near the taxation thing. And this comes from my secession solution, which is my take on shrinking the federal government and providing us with a way to downsize and turn the country around, put it on a better path, because it's definitely going the wrong way. You know, I think the question I'd ask, I would love to ask this question to Obama in front of the world, is that, Mr. President, have you ever read a free market economics book? And he'd probably go, well, it's something that I've wanted to do for years, and as he searches for words, and maybe I'll get to it after the election. So I covered the economics part, civil liberties, my preamble to it. I covered the monetary system. And taxes. So now I'm going to move on to Social Security, which is that fifth rail that no one wants to touch. Because so many people think that Roosevelt's vote buying scheme is there to save them. Because Social Security is a pyramid scheme. It is a Ponzi scheme. And it's carried out by the federal government. It was FDR's vote buying Ponzi scheme, Ponzi scheme, and what's the other word I used? I suddenly can't remember. But it was a vote buying thing, and what's it done? It's destroyed, you know, it hasn't helped private savings. You know, families used to take care of their elderly more closely, and now it's more dependent on the state. You know, it's a bankrupt system, will be bankrupt. They've rated it. The demographics are different. I was surprised. I didn't realize that they rated Social Security for other programs, and mostly the Democrats doing, and they're the big proponents of Social Security. So the way I see the Social Security mess is as follows. From my secession solution, we ask our former federal government to honor all Social Security obligations or offer a lump sum buyout to current recipients. Now, here's an important aspect of it. This would apply to people I know. Individuals who have paid into the Social Security system and who really do not need it and don't mind foregoing it are just asked to opt out of receiving it. There is no longer a mandatory government-funded Social Security system. All individuals are free to contribute to their own private retirement system, of which many options will come into existence, and there are no taxes on retirement income. So that's an important thing, other things coming into existence for saving or investment, or none at all if the person doesn't choose to. Maybe he's got other assets, or you know, he doesn't need to save because he's got money or he has something else going on. And of course I'm concerned about the less fortunate and whatnot, but that would largely fall up to private charity or, you know, within the states. It doesn't need to be some massive national government funded with our taxes program, which they still mismanage. And when St. Reagan in 83, he had Greenspan sit on his commission for Social Security reform. And what did that treasonous bastard Greenspan advocate was, I believe raising the retirement age and higher deductions, which caused taxes to go up under Reagan. Withholding taxes went up under Reagan. You know, Reagan was a big spender. It's like I'm fond of saying, very in my cheeky way, one of the first things that St. Reagan did after taking office was to pressure his Republican Congress to reluctantly raise the debt ceiling. So that by the time that St. Reagan left office, he had tripled, if not quadrupled, the national debt. So that's Reagan for you, a big spender. And some conservatives, they can't swallow this. They're living on their laurels, or they didn't pay attention at the time, but Reagan was a big spender and gave us this massive federally directed drug war, even though he was opposed to socialism and saying he didn't leave the Democrat Party, it left him. But then again, Reagan looked up to Roosevelt, as I understand it, FDR. He even read extensive quotes of FDR's to Congress when he was trying to get his stuff passed. So enough of St. Reagan. I never voted for him, never trusted him, never liked him. All right, healthcare. Now, some people think they know what's best for other people. I only know two things that are best for other people. The first one is a true, unhampered, free market economy, as Ludwig von Mises, the brilliant economist of the 20th century, would say. I forgot my thought there. I'm in favor of two things that I can speak for everybody else that I would have, you know, conforming to what I want. Only two things. One is a true free market economy, a true laissez-faire free market capitalist economy with no bailouts, no subsidies, no protectionism, no corporate welfare. That's the one thing I know it's best for everybody. And the second thing I know that is best for everyone in terms of health and nutrition, which is what I start out my healthcare title with on the subtitle solutions and explanations here in my secession solution. Underneath healthcare, this is the one thing I know most that I would say I know for everybody. You know, people say, or opposed to people who know what's best for everybody else. Like, again, there's only two things I know that are best for anything everybody else. One, a truly unhampered, competitive, free market economy. And two, in terms of healthcare, quote, diet, nutrition, vitamin and mineral supplementation, exercise, and holistic alternative medicine. That is chiropractic, naturopathy, homeopathy, acupuncture, and more, should be everyone's first choice for health maintenance and illness prevention. There you have it again. Diet, nutrition, vitamin and mineral supplementation, exercise, and holistic alternative medicine. By that I mean chiropractic, naturopathy, homeopathy, acupuncture, and more. These alternative holistic medicine practices should be everyone's first choice for health maintenance and illness prevention. Of course, we need doctors and surgeons, thank goodness, but mostly for crisis medicine. Accidents, car accidents, heart attacks, stroke, but not for regular health maintenance. Okay, also under my health care reforms, there's no government harassment or persecution of holistic alternative medicine. No government harassment or persecution of holistic alternative medicine producers and manufacturers of vitamins, minerals, equipment and machinery. Even as I speak, so brilliantly, of course, there's politicians and bureaucrats, thanks to the AMA and that whole government gobbledygook crowd. Some want to make it illegal to obtain vitamins and minerals without a prescription. Or they want to overregulate this industry too. And they should have a complete hands-off policy towards it. And if people are harmed by bad supplements or vitamins and minerals, which is usually never, or these devices or whatever, well, they could sue for damages. No government harassment or persecution of holistic alternative medicine producers and manufacturers of vitamins, minerals, equipment, and machinery. Now, here's a very, very important one. No government-enforced FDA AMA pharmaceutical monopoly. I call that the evil triangle. AMA, FDA, pharmaceutical industry. Big pharma, if you will. No government-mandated requirements on health insurance. This pushes the price up. And the government involves itself in something like that that it has no business being in, and thwarting the private sector, who should be totally involved in it. No tax-supported health care and no mandatory health insurance. No government-mandated requirements on health insurance. The purpose of health insurance is mainly for catastrophic purposes, and catastrophic insurance is not real expensive. Now, here's an important engineering idea of it, the nuts and bolts of the system. Tax-free medical savings accounts become the norm. They are portable, and if need be, medical insurance premiums may be paid from them. Of course, tort law reform and reform of outrageous jury awards, which contribute to higher health care costs and higher insurance premiums. So those need serious attention. Now, physicians would be free to publicly post and to clearly advertise that they do not have medical malpractice insurance. Afterwards, their customers enjoy lower costs. No government interference in purchasing insurance across state lines. Hell, that should have been a given. The fact that they even have to bring that up in their debates and bitch about it. There is no government interference or prohibition in purchasing of foreign-made medicines. There is no government interference into the medication choices of the terminally ill. No government interference into the wishes of the exit strategy of the terminally ill. Here's one I like. No mandatory vaccines. No government interference in advertising by doctors and dentists. And of course, for those who have serious addiction issues, drugs, alcohol, and gambling addictions will be treated medically with education, prevention, and compassion. Gee, don't we need to throw more people in prisons to help the prison industrial complex, which Reagan fueled with his stupid drug war? What a waste. Nixon got that crap started in 71, I believe, although there was, you know, drug prohibitions on the books and this and that, different types, but it really got bad in the 70s. And that's when more crime started, more killing. You know, we're rid of Al Capone for, 40 years, and now this crap started. Okay. Charity and social welfare. Private charity is encouraged and necessary, or necessary and encouraged, private charity. There is no government interference or harassment of private charity, soup kitchens, feeding the homeless, the less fortunate, and caring for the sick are the duties of numerous charities and voluntary doctor care, including churches, food banks, Goodwill, the Red Cross, Salvation Army, rescue missions, and numerous secular and religious charities, including Christian charities, Muslim charities, Hindu charities, Jewish charities, Buddhist charities, agnostic charities, atheist charities, and other private charities. I always like this one. All current public housing is deeded over to the current residents. It is now theirs to own and maintain and or to sell. There is no more government forced urban renewal, which uproots whole neighborhoods and businesses and the local infrastructure. Therefore, ladies and gentlemen, our new economic system of micro taxes, micro regulations, and no drug war will greatly lessen the number of poor and lower income people while providing much more opportunity in a sea of hopelessness and despair. Wow. Deep, PK. Our new economic system of micro taxes, micro regulations, and no drug war will greatly lessen the number of poor and lower income people while providing much more opportunity in a sea of hopelessness and despair. My goodness, did I write that? Mighty PK? I like that. I'll quote myself. Okay, guns. There's no gun control. There's no gun confiscation. Like credit checks, background checks, and police reports would detect undesirable would-be purchasers. There are few gun ownership restrictions, except towards violent criminals or violent ex-felons. Here's the gist of it. The use of firearms for other than sport, hunting, or self-defense are subject to harsh persecution and incarceration. However, because there is no drug prohibition, no drug war, and vastly increased employment opportunities, the incidence of violent gun crimes and murder will greatly decrease, as will crime in general. Okay, moving on to energy. I always advocate a free market in energy with a multi-pronged approach, which includes oil, gas, coal, nuclear, solar, wind, and other developing technologies. No government subsidies to energy producers, which only result, ladies and gentlemen, in political privilege, corporate welfare, more crony capitalism, and more government industry partnership boondoggles, like that awful ethanol. No government imposed damage liability caps, which, you know, they use for their protected interests. No government persecution or harassment of alternative energy. In the early 2000s, I was at a Libertarian Party national convention, and I remember the head, I believe it was the Heartland Institute, speaking about energy. And he said at the time that, you know, he's not opposed to all alternative energy and other, you know, forms of energies, you know, especially if it's not subsidized. But he said that pretty much still fossil fuels win hands down in price and efficiency. There's just not, it isn't real competitive yet with other fuels. And oil, as I understand it, because I am a disciple of the late, great Dr. Thomas Gold, oil is not a fossil fuel. It is a abiotic fuel. I'm a disciple of the late, great Thomas, Dr. Thomas Gold, who was an astronomer. How dare an astronomer venture into geology? Well, he said, and I think he's very correct on this, he said that the sun is constantly, sorry, not the sun, sorry, the Earth's mantle, it's very high, the Earth's mantle is constantly producing oil. And if you drill deep enough, you'll find it. And Russia has the leading deep oil drilling technology. So that is my take on oil, that there's plenty there. It burns more efficiently nowadays. And I'm still for alternative energy and other energy supplies. However, nature did not distribute natural resources equally throughout the globe. And as I was saying, this fellow from the Heartland Institute was saying how that hands down, fossil fuels still win for price and availability. I believe that. Of course, I want cleaner air and more clean cars and all this. But it's so hypocritical for the federal government to mandate all this stuff when they're the biggest polluter in the country. Look at the wars. Look at the depleted uranium spewed across Iraq and Afghanistan. Have you seen the deformed babies? It's awful. Just awful. And most of them are dead anyway, but, grotesquely deformed, scary-looking stuff. Just awful. So there's only 4 points to my energy is, as complex as energy is, there's only 4 points to my secession solution about how to deal with it. No government persecution or harassment of alternative energy. What I would like to see is all the Greens and that crowd, like especially in this country, I wish they could have their own state, say like New Mexico or somewhere, and have their own little society, their own little country, and let's say like after a year, we don't allow any fossil fuels. So they have to run their own society on their great alternative fuels, solar and wind. That's how they do during inclement weather. They'll be begging for fossil fuels. So that's what I'd like to see, that whole green crowd. Let them have their own country, or the liberals. Let them have their own country. I would love to see them. And under secession, they could. They can form out their own country, and they can show the rest of us how well their green alternative energy works. Now, I don't know how long this is going to take, but they better be damn glad that we still have fossil fuels, which would be, coal, and I guess natural gas, although natural gas, as I understand it, is usually found wherever you find oil also. Okay, moving on to foreign policy and defense. This is where Ron Paul always has problems and issues with other Republicans who always lie and smear and call him an isolationist. No matter how many times you tell these idiots, it's not isolationism. It's anti-interventionism. They still don't get it or won't get it. I advocate the founders, foreign policy, pretty much, which is implied. That is, foreign policy and defense, arms neutrality and free trade with goodwill to all nations are the foundations of our foreign policy. Since there will be no endlessly growing centralized welfare warfare state, there will be no empire or nation building and no tax-funded foreign aid. Now, all seceding states or territories would maintain a common defense, and each seceding state or territory, their National Guard and Air National Guard becomes its own defense force, and all Coast Guard ships stationed at coastal seceding states become that state's Coast Guard. And here's the four sub-no categories. No political or military intervention into the affairs of foreign countries. No stationing troops throughout the world. No draft registration. No conscription. You got that, Uncle Sam? And your military, industrial, congressional banking complex. You got that? You're bankrupting our country. And the denial that the Republican hierarchy has and the GOP about the expense of the wars, the futility of it. You know, they're trying to save face. Just, you know, defending this crap. And it's just awful. So that stuff would be over. Yes, there's still gun rights, of course, like I just spoke of. And that's what confounds, like, other Republicans or the pro-war crowd, the neocons, because they know Dr. Paul, for example. They know he's anti-war. He doesn't want us in these wars. But yet he's also very pro-gun right, gun rights, as I am. And a lot of, you know, the anti-war crowd has been traditionally also anti-gun rights. So this is another way that conservatives are confounded, because we libertarians or Ron Paul Republicans, we're anti-war, but at the same time, we're very pro-gun ownership, which is tough and confusing for a lot of conservatives or Republicans to square that and figure that out. All right, moving on to NASA. Not another socialist administration. Thank you very much. I wrote that acronym. NASA facilities will not be disturbed but no longer funded by seceding states. There's no tax-funded space program. And there's no government interference with private sector space exploration. So, I recommend selling NASA to the highest bidders, foreign or domestic, and let the U.S. Air Force deal with the strategic part, but cut the taxpayer, you know, loose from the rest. It's just too much. It's too expensive. You know, the dreams of scientists to go to these different planets and all their little stuff, well, that's fine if they can raise the money for it. But we're advanced enough today where we don't need these huge government subsidies or handouts to industry. They've already made a mess of it with Solyndra, with Obama rewarding one of these green companies with loans or, you know, sweetheart loans or bailouts. Amtrak is another government-owned fiasco. I like the way I wrote this, too. Amtrak trains may run undisturbed through our states or republics or territories. We will pay to ride them, but we will send no taxes to Washington, D.C. to subsidize Amtrak. Don't you love it? Okay, environment. Pollution is essentially a scientific problem requiring numerous diverse technologies, innovations, inventions, ideas, and improvements of existing technologies. Strict liability applied to producers through tort law and property rights. Again, all pollution is local. All poverty is local. All crime is local. All pollution is local. Strict liability applied to polluters through tort law and property rights. There's no government protection of special interest group polluters, be it say the oil companies or, utility companies, defense contractors. No government-enforced limits on polluters' liability. No harassment or persecution of alternative pollution technology and environmental protection technology. Well, that's a good thing. We don't want these new entrepreneurs and creators hassled by more state control and intervention. Moving on to eminent domain. very narrowly defined conditions of eminent domain, which apply mainly to roads and bridges, power lines, utilities, and railroad tracks. Private property may never be taken from its rightful owners and given unethically to other private owners and or private developers, regardless of compensation. So they can't take your homes to put up a beachfront hotel building. They better hope there's a storm to ruin those homes. And if the homes have insurance and they want to rebuild, well, that's fine. They can't manipulate them. I mean, I would, you know, if they were seriously in my way, I would offer them so much money that they'd get the hell out of the way. Okay, immigration. English is the official language of our new country or state or republic. All government documents and all road signage are written in English. U.S. citizens from states that have not seceded may come and go and work, own property, reside, and invest without government harassment. Again, under immigration. U.S. citizens from other states that have not seceded may come and go, work, own property, reside, and invest without government harassment. Pretty good deal, huh, folks? All immigrants must pass through a legal immigration process. An effective guest worker program must be established. Now, since there is no centralized government welfare state, illegal immigrants cannot receive free health care or free education, and there are no anchor babies. So these are incentives for people to come here illegally and to, you know, sponge off the system. And, of course, getting there. What does the mighty PK say about that? I'll read it to you. Getting there. To more readily achieve our newly seceded nation or nation states, I suggest that the 11 southern states that first seceded should lead the way through nullification, followed by peaceful secession based on the new Constitution's principles, rules, and conditions as listed above. Other issues and problems will be addressed with a pro-market, pro-individual rights, limited government methodology. Now, since change is the only constant, as opposed to hope and change, since change is the only constant, our new nation with its true free market economy and its sound monetary system will more readily adapt to technology, innovation, foreign trade, and foreign competition. We will be on the competitive cutting edge with no government interference in the market system and the monetary system. Liberty for all and special privileges for none. Which I started at the top also. Liberty for all, special privileges for none. What a great way to start and finish my secession solution. Let me read that last paragraph again. Since change is the only constant, our new nation with its true free market economy and its sound monetary system will more readily adapt to technology, innovation, foreign trade, and foreign competition. We will be on the competitive cutting edge with no government intervention in the market system and the monetary system. Liberty for all, special privileges for none. Because, everyone, secession is good, secession is right, secession works. Now, P.S., to those who would say that the secession based upon the above new constitution is unworkable, I pose this hypothetical question. If you did have the choice of remaining in the U.S. as it is now, or you could live in this new constitutional republic as laid out by PK, which would you choose? I wish we could vote on it. I think even a lot of the have-nots would support it. So, well, it looks like the mighty PK has come to the end of his show. So I want to thank again BBS Radio for allowing me to bring my wisdom to the masses. And as I sign off, just want you to know that I am the mighty PK, And I am here on my show, Third Stream View, at bbsradio.com, Station 2, every Monday evening, 8:55 Pacific, 10:55 Central, 11:55 Eastern. So please tune in again, multitudes of fans, every Monday evening here at Third Stream View on bbsradio.com. I'm your not-so-humble host, PK, signing off, saying good night, everyone. Take care. I'll see you next week.